Call the Civil Law Committee to order. Roll will be noted. And Representative Hilty, you want to move the approval of the minutes?
I would move their approval, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Members, we'll move right into House File 1, presentation of this bill by Representative Fabian. If Representative Fabian, you want to come and present your bill to our committee. The chair will move House File 1 for consideration to pass through the Civil Law Committee and be referred to the Judiciary Committee. I understand there's just a technical amendment to get it in the shape the author wants it. Has that been handed out?
No.
Oh, it hasn't. When we get that, we'll pass it out. Where's that? Okay. Well, we'll give you more insight on that as soon as I know more. Representative Fabian, tell us what your bill is, and I don't think we'll have a problem with time today, but generally if your side could keep it to a half hour and the others, anybody opposing it would try to keep theirs to within a half hour block of time, and that'll give us time for questions from the committee as well. So please proceed. Identify yourself for the record. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Fabian. I'm a House representative from District 1A. I'm here today to talk to you about House File 1. I've also asked Thad Lightfoot here, who is an attorney in this area, has lots of experience on both sides of the issue, and when it comes to technical questions and so forth regarding the law and the parts in the bill that pertain to moving from district court to appeals court. I'll refer those questions to Thad. House File 1 is a bill for me that's important in my area. It's important all across the state. I've had an opportunity to meet with business leaders. I've had an opportunity to meet with our county commissioners. Our county engineers were here and testified last week to the Energy Committee, talking about their frustration with the permitting process, the length of time, and the costs that are really becoming prohibitive to getting these permits. What we want to accomplish in House File 1 is establishing a goal of 150 days for the MPCA and the DNR to issue permits. If the goal cannot be met in 150 days, what we would like is to have a report issued that explains why the goal of 150 days was not met. The purpose of it is to allow for some differences here at the beginning of this permitting review that helps us to understand why does it take a greater length of time to get some permits done and a shorter length of time, and we can understand that maybe by doing that we can come to a more of a uniform goal for the different permits to be met. We also have a goal in the bill again is a goal. It asks the DNR and MPCA to issue their ruling on the EIS in 30 days instead of 90 days. And again, this is a goal. We understand that sometimes it might take longer to review a permit that is several hundred pages or several thousand pages than one that's a relatively short one for a project that doesn't require as much data collection. We also want to eliminate the district court review of the environmental review decisions and send those appeals directly to the appeals court. We would like also for the project proposer to be able to contract directly with the consultant. We'll allow them to have communications that will speed up the process. Gathering the data will be, we think, more efficient, and hopefully we can get these things online a lot sooner. And then also the part in the bill has to do with the adapting some federal standards. If our state standards are higher, we would like the agencies to have to explain to us why the federal standard does not protect the public health. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what the bill is. Mr. Chair?
Representative Fabian, if you want your testifier to identify himself and offer his testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Thaddeus Lightfoot. I am an environmental lawyer with a firm called the Environmental Law Group in Minneapolis. I practice environmental law in government and private practice for a little over 20 years, I guess. I'm getting old. I'm former chair of the Minnesota State Bar Association's environmental law section and have been an adjunct professor of environmental law at the William Mitchell College of Law for 8 years. And of particular relevance to this committee, I've represented a number of plaintiffs groups, responsible governmental units, and project proposers in environmental review litigation under the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act. And I am testifying in support of House File 1 and in particular in support of removing district court jurisdiction in MEPA litigation and having that litigation go directly to the Court of Appeals after a decision has been made by a responsible governmental unit to go forward, or that environmental review complies with MEPA. I believe that that will increase the efficiency of the statute without limiting any rights that Minnesota citizens have under the statute. Right now, MEPA provides for only district court jurisdiction, at least in the first instance. An action challenging an environmental review decision has to be filed in the district court in the county in which a proposed action would take place, and it must be filed within 30 days of that decision. I believe that there is district court jurisdiction under the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act because the act was enacted in 1973, and at the time there was no intermediate appellate court in Minnesota. The legislature didn't create the Minnesota Court of Appeals until 1983. The standard of review in both district court and the Court of Appeals is the same standard. The district court and the Court of Appeals evaluate the same administrative record that a responsible governmental unit prepares. In other words, these two courts do exactly the same thing. They just do it twice. They apply the same standard of review and the same law to the same administrative record. And in fact, as you may well know, parties cannot advance new legal arguments in the Court of Appeals. So typically the briefs that are filed in the district court and that are filed in the Court of Appeals with respect to these matters look very, very similar. Another important consideration is that there is no district court jurisdiction over environmental permits issued by state agencies. So Minnesota Pollution Control Agency permits, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources permits, Minnesota Department of Agricultural permits, agriculture permits, if they are challenged, they must be challenged in the Court of Appeals, which means that if a party is challenging those permits right now and challenging the underlying environmental review upon which those permits were based, that party is in two forums. It has to file an action in district court under MEPA to challenge the environmental review decision, and a petition for certiorari in the Court of Appeals to challenge the permit decision. In my last case, environmental review case, before the Court of Appeals, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources made a determination that an environmental impact statement was adequate in August of 2007, but the Minnesota Court of Appeals did not ultimately approve DNR's determination until September of 2009. And the reason it took so long is because we spent over a year litigating the adequacy of the environmental impact statement in district court before we got to the Court of Appeals, where we made the same arguments and ultimately the same outcome. Ultimately, the Court of Appeals came to the same outcome as the district court. Let me just briefly respond to a number of the issues that some opponents have raised with respect to removing district court jurisdiction. First, some have suggested that eliminating district court jurisdiction somehow limits citizens' participation. That is simply incorrect. Both in district court and in the Court of Appeals right now under MEPA, there is no citizen participation. Citizen participation in MEPA comes during the environmental review process in comments upon the environmental review documents. So having an environmental review decision go directly to the Court of Appeals rather than first spending time in district court does not in any way limit citizen participation. Second, there are a number of people who have raised the concern about if you have the matter go directly to district court, you'll force outstate Minnesotans to travel to the to St. Paul to the Court of Appeals to have their day in court. Two responses there. First, citizens don't get their day in court under MEPA in district court or in the Court of Appeals right now. Lawyers get the citizen's day in court. Citizen participation is during the environmental review process. If there is a concern about citizens wanting to attend oral arguments, and by the way, typically these cases are resolved in district court right now on the law, on motions for summary judgment. There is an appellate rule that allows for counsel to request that oral arguments to be heard outstate or in districts other than in the Court of Appeals in St. Paul. And at least in my experience as a practical matter, most of the time environmental lawyers handle these matters, and most environmental lawyers who practice environmental law in the Twin Cities. In this state. So typically what happens is that environmental lawyers now travel outstate to argue these cases in district court, and that's costly for clients. I think it is less expensive for clients to travel to St. Paul to a Court of Appeals hearing if it came to that and if the Court of Appeals was unwilling to hold the hearing remotely rather than pay lawyers to travel to International Falls, for example, where I had an oral argument on an environmental review case not long ago. Third, there are some who have suggested that it is more costly in terms of filing fees to file these cases in the Court of Appeals than in district court. That, too, is incorrect. The Court of Appeals filing fee right now is $550 for a petition for certiorari. District court filing fee is between $300 and $330 for a complaint. But then you also have to deal with motions in district court, and there are filing fees associated with those motions. Typical filing fees in a MEPA case to resolve the case to the parties, to a plaintiff, runs about $550, which is exactly the filing fee that a party challenging an environmental review decision would pay in the Court of Appeals. In addition, some have suggested that depriving a district court of jurisdiction deprives plaintiffs of the right of discovery. That, frankly, misunderstands MEPA. There is no right of discovery under the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act. It is an administrative decision based upon an administrative record. There is no discovery. The district court doesn't take any testimony. In addition, some have suggested that the Court of Appeals isn't designed to consider environmental review decisions. That too is incorrect. Right now, when the Court of Appeals hears an environmental review decision on appeal from the district court, it considers not just transcripts and briefs, but the entire administrative record. So there would be no difference in the way the Court of Appeals would handle a matter if it had original jurisdiction rather than appellate jurisdiction from the district court. Sixth, some, and this one is one that I find particularly interesting. Some have suggested that in order to file a case in the Court of Appeals, you would need to hire an appellate specialist. You know, as a practical matter, I've handled probably a dozen environmental review cases. In every case but one, the same lawyers who have addressed the case in district court have also handled that case in the Court of Appeals. And it makes sense because environmental lawyers, not appellate lawyers, typically handle these cases. You don't hire a trial lawyer in district court because there's no trial. It's record review, and it is the decision is on the law. So there's no need to hire an appellate specialist. Eliminating the district court jurisdiction wouldn't change the administrative record in any way. District courts don't create the administrative record here. It's created by the responsible governmental unit, and it would be under House File 1 as well. Some have suggested that eliminating district court jurisdiction is going to make it more difficult for plaintiffs to coordinate environmental actions. And as I suggested, in fact, right now, the way MEPA is set up, it makes it more difficult to coordinate environmental actions because to bring a challenge to an environmental permit, at least issued from a state agency, puts you right now into two forums rather than one. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, it's obvious, but I think it bears repeating, eliminating duplicative district court jurisdiction won't change the outcome in these cases. It won't change the outcome because the standard of review is the same, administrative record is the same, and frankly, if a responsible governmental unit prepares an inadequate administrative record or otherwise acts arbitrarily, the Court of Appeals is going to reverse that decision, as it has in the past. And there are many Court of Appeals decisions in which the Court has determined that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and other local governmental units have acted arbitrarily and capriciously under MEPA. So House File 1 doesn't do anything to change the outcome of these cases. It preserves the ability of citizens to challenge environmental review decisions without duplicating the efforts of the district court and the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Representative Hortman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate that I have to ask a question and then I have to go because I have to be in court in Anoka County at 1:30. I thought you'd be doing overviews at this point in the calendar. No, I'm not representing myself. It's a civil matter. But, Mr. Chair, I thought I should say a few words since I carried the very similar bill in the last biennium, and we did adopt some portions of environmental streamlining as my bill went through the process. I think that the 150-day goal makes a lot of sense, and I'm sure later in the hearing you'll be talking about the executive order that the governor signed today. But with regard to Section 6, I did want to say a few words because as I carried the bill, the identical language, I learned a lot through the process. And my goal was to consolidate the forum, to speed things up so that people wouldn't be doing things twice. But one thing that this committee will hear about, I'm sure, from the other witnesses and needs to really do an in-depth examination of is there are cases where we would actually be dividing the forum and creating two different forums for these matters by putting the appeal right in the Court of Appeals and taking it out of the district court. And the reason for that is these projects entail local decisions that are appealable to the district court and then environmental permit and environmental review decisions that we would be putting at the Court of Appeals. So I think as we try to consolidate the action in one forum, we have to recognize the diversity of issues that are involved in these type of cases. And I think it would really serve the committee well to know where the legislative auditor comes out. I know that they're doing 14 case studies with actual facts on different cases of how long environmental review has taken. And this was an area when I was moving my bill through the process where it's very hard to come by actual facts about specific situations and how long things are taking. So I brought a copy of the Environmental Review Streamlining Report that the Pollution Control Agency put together in December 2009 that has a lot of suggestions of areas that we can look at to make the process quicker. And one that we really need to combine with the ideas that Representative Fabian is bringing forward is earlier public engagement. Any business who takes action to improve their business site knows that if you reach out to your neighbors before you move forward, you get a lot more cooperation and collaboration, and you can make changes that make people a lot happier, which actually speeds up the process. So that's a big piece of the streamlining issue that we haven't really looked at yet, either in my legislation last year or in Representative Fabian's legislation. But I just thought since I carried the bill last year, I should let people know that I think Section 6 is a complex issue. We were never able to come together around some language that would make sure we were doing one forum, whether it's district court in a certain case or the Court of Appeals in another case, but that is language that this committee should really try to come behind if we're going to accomplish the goal of actually streamlining these cases. And Mr. Chair, I'll just ask the pages to pass out the Environmental Review Streamlining Report. And then the most significant thing for folks to take a look at is on page 9 of the report, which makes clear that the projects that really throw the averages off are major transportation projects, typically including the federal government. But when you look at the average PCA review of a project or the average DNR review of a project, they're very close to the goals that we're putting in statute. And the other really significant fact is more than 50% of these issues go through our city and county governments. And so as we look at putting goals in place for the PCA and the DNR, we should also probably be talking about putting goals in place for the cities and the counties. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. Sorry, I have to run to court.
Representative Hortman, you've given me a good segue into thanks to those members that were able to make it last week to Law School for Legislators. Representative Hortman, your need to be in the court reminds me of Representative Pugh's presentation, and one of the things he focused on was the statute 3.19, which I haven't pulled up to verify, and if I remember it exactly right, but that gives legislators the ability to postpone court until session is over. I don't know if you've ever thought of using that or not, but maybe just a tip from Representative Pugh, who offered that to us Friday. And there was other insightful things there, members that couldn't make it, and so what you didn't gain, we're not going to review totally here, but it was a good forum, and it's not often you get to talk to Supreme Court justices for several hours throughout the day. So,
well, Mr. Chair, I'll definitely keep that in mind for future court dates that are scheduled this session. I just thought we'd be doing like a generic overview of the judiciary that I could maybe miss today. So, congratulations for getting off to a fast start this session.
Very good. Thanks. Good luck in court. thanks for that insight. Mr. Lightfoot, just any could you respond to the concern about maybe the forum issue isn't consolidated into one in total, or there's problems yet?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, representatives. No matter what you do, you're going to be in two forums. The problem arises with zoning issues and other determinations that involve conditional use permits. And in that circumstance, only a district court has jurisdiction over those local conditional use permit decisions and zoning decisions. However, those projects tend to be smaller in nature. The larger projects will require pollution control agency permits, DNR permits, other quasi-judicial permits. And in that circumstance, the case law in Minnesota is clear. A district court does not have jurisdiction over those permits. The only jurisdiction is in the Court of Appeals. So House File 1 would streamline by allowing consolidated jurisdiction for really what at least in my experience has been the most important permits for larger projects, rather than having local land use decisions or conditional use permits being a tail that wags the dog, so to speak.
Thank you. Representative Hilty has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lightfoot, if we have the ability to eliminate the jurisdiction of a district court, why not eliminate the Court of Appeals instead?
Mr. Lightfoot.
Mr. Chair, Representative, why not eliminate the? I'm not sure. Why not?
Well, if our Mr. Chair, Mr. Lightfoot, if the goal is to expedite the proceedings, why not simply eliminate the ability of the Court of Appeals to review the decision of the district court?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the MEPA right now is the anomaly. The Court of Appeals has jurisdiction over actions by state agencies such as the Pollution Control Agency and the DNR. District courts typically do not, and so it is a district court anomaly rather than a Court of Appeals anomaly. I suppose the legislature could eliminate a challenge to could eliminate the appeal to the Court of Appeals. But in that case, that suggests that there would be no right of appeal. Is that what you're suggesting, Mr. Chair, Representative?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lightfoot, I'm suggesting that eliminating the district court basically is eliminating the right of appeal, since there isn't any appeal except to the Supreme Court from the Court of Appeals. And do we want to go in that direction?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there certainly is ability to appeal a Court of Appeals decision to the Minnesota Supreme Court by filing a petition for review of the decision of the Court of Appeals. And in fact, there have been a number of environmental review cases, including several recently, in which the Supreme Court has taken a decision of the Court of Appeals, and in one case, an unreported decision of the Court of Appeals, and reversed that in the context of environmental review.
Representative Hilty, any that answer you? Representative Lesch, and then Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lightfoot, dovetailing off of Representative Hilty's question, you said there were a number of cases that were appealed from the Court of Appeals to the Supreme Court. And I understand, I'm a criminal law guy, I don't know this that well. I know in the criminal law, there's an automatic right of appeal from the district court to the Court of Appeals. But if you want to appeal to the Supreme Court, they only certify a very few number of those, and you're lucky to get a review on that. How many cases of these types have been successfully appealed to the Supreme Court from the Court of Appeals of those cases you mentioned?
Mr. Lightfoot.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there have been a handful of cases, and I cannot tell you off the top of my head how many that have been appealed from the Court of Appeals to the Supreme Court. I would agree with you that a petition for review to the Minnesota Supreme Court is not granted as a matter of right. There are only a handful. A number of cases are not appealed from the Court of Appeals to the Minnesota Supreme Court. My recollection is about probably 20 to 25% or so of petitions for review are granted by the Minnesota Supreme Court when they're filed. Sometimes there are fewer. The point with respect to this legislation is that in most cases, not in all cases, but in most cases, the Court of Appeals affirms the district court decision on environmental review. There have been some cases where the Court of Appeals has not, and then the Minnesota Supreme Court takes that case and in fact reverses the Court of Appeals decision. Citizens Advocating Responsible Development versus Candio High County, for example, a 2007 or 2008 case which was unreported in the Court of Appeals but was taken by the Minnesota Supreme Court and was reversed.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Can you tell me, is in civil law like this too, or these types of cases, is there an automatic right of appeal as it stands currently from district court to the Court of Appeals? And you're nodding, so...
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is an automatic right of appeal to the Court of Appeals from district court under MEPA right now. That's correct.
Okay, then, Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
Representative Lesch.
Mr. Lightfoot, then how are you going to handle, from what I remember from law school, the right of appeal is one of the basic parts of formal due process. So if you're essentially eliminating that, now you can say, no, there are a few cases that the Supreme Court could still get, but much fewer. My chances of the right of review or my chances to guarantee my rights under due process are substantially affected by this. How are you going to successfully defend against a lawsuit to that effect if one is brought up?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would respectfully disagree that there is any due process issue here. Eliminating district court jurisdiction makes the administrative decision by a responsible governmental unit under MEPA no different than an administrative decision by a state agency under the Minnesota Administrative Procedure Act, for example, to issue a permit. that the district court lacks jurisdiction over such permits. There is, in fact, an appeal, but it is directly to the Court of Appeals. So the direct appeal to the Court of Appeals satisfies due process rights. There's no reason to require appeal that further appeal to the Supreme Court. The Court of Appeals has a direct appeal from pollution control agency permits, for example, and other administrative decisions by state agencies. House File 1 simply tracks that rationale for MEPA.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lightfoot, I'm a layperson to this process. I'm neither an attorney, and I haven't dealt with it personally in the area of the MPCA. But I have had a lot of input from constituents, also former legislators that have dealt with these, and articles that I've read occasionally that I've come across. The interesting thing, I just was given an article on Saturday by a constituent where I was at a meeting, and in that article it talked about a collapse of a steel tank at a ethanol plant in Claremont. The article was carried January 5th, 2011, in the Le Center Leader, which is a paper in my district. What the article brings out, a 250,000-gallon tank collapsed. It mostly contained cooked cornmeal. Now, the interesting thing about that tank is that the ethanol plant had applied for a permit with the MPCA, according to the article, to replace that tank back in June and July. And so they knew it needed to be replaced, and they were waiting for the approval process. Here's the quote from the individual in charge of the plant. He says, "The company already had the footing in place for the new tank. In order to replace that tank that collapsed Saturday, Alcorn had initially arranged for construction crews to begin work in June or July. Doyle," that's the manager, "said while he would have expected such a permit to be approved in one day in Iowa, the MPCA determined there was a change in permit request slowing the process down. Doyle's comment, it takes a long time to get stuff done in Minnesota." So here we have an example, as reported, where the delay in permitting process actually was an endangerment to people's lives and property. So the process can be drawn out so long that it actually creates an endangerment within a business to some of the employees. Now, fortunately, when the tank collapsed, nobody was present there, so they didn't have any injuries at least noted in the article. The other thing is, if we look at the copper and nickel mine up north, it's dragged on for over 5 years and cost the company multiple millions of dollars, and this particular mine could provide hundreds, I've heard even thousands of jobs when you talk about private sector jobs, when you talk about the spinoff from the copper and nickel mining project. One of the things I've been told by former state reps is that we have one of the strictest environmentalist permitting processes in the entire nation. And it's at the point where it's costing us jobs, and I think we need to move the process back to a better balance with our neighboring competitors. Could you comment briefly on your knowledge of neighboring states' process, such as South Dakota or Iowa, compared to Minnesota, along with how we compare nationally in this permitting process?
Mr. Lightfoot.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can comment anecdotally, and I will say that first, at least for my clients, and I can only speak to my clients, we're not looking at necessarily competing with just Iowa or Wisconsin. We're looking at competing internationally. And it has frankly, and again, just anecdotally based on my experience, it has frankly been difficult in some respects to convince clients to expand facilities in the state of Minnesota when they can say that I can put that same facility, or I can expand a similar facility in Ireland or elsewhere overseas or in other states more quickly than the environmental review and permitting process here. So it can ultimately be a disincentive to expansion without necessarily improving environmental outcomes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Just one final comment. You know, again, I'm a layperson, but the more information I receive, the more concerned I am about our Department of MPCA and also the DNR. It seems they have come to believe, and in a philosophy of pristine environment. In other words, an environment free from any human evidence or usage, and therefore it's almost an impossible goal to meet in terms of operating a business. Final comment is when you have an industrial business, you are going to have some pollution. All of us want a clean environment, but we need to draw a balance between a clean environment and allowing businesses to operate in our state profitably and effectively. I think this bill takes us a step closer to that. I personally think we should go further than this, but I'm satisfied with the direction that the bill is taking. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Wardlow, you had a question, and then I've got a question, and then we'd like to move to the other testifiers, and there will be more time for questions than members as well. So, Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, thank you for bringing this important bill forward. Mr. Lightfoot, just so I can get my mind wrapped around this, generally actions for declaratory judgment in district court for review of compliance with MEPA are those reviewing decisions that are quasi-judicial in nature?
Mr. Lightfoot.
Mr. Chair, Representative, they are reviewing administrative decisions that are quasi-judicial in nature, yes.
Okay, so by removing the district court's jurisdiction and moving it to the Court of Appeals, it would be reviewed by a writ or a petition for certiorari to the Court of Appeals, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would envision that that would be how the review would take place. It would be for on a petition for certiorari, similar to review of other administrative decisions.
Okay, and may the Court of Appeals then, if it finds that the responsible governmental unit has not complied with MEPA, reverse or remand to the governmental unit for proceedings consistent with the court's decision?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, in fact, there is no, if, for example, a Court of Appeals made a determination that an environmental assessment worksheet was inadequate, the court could but need not necessarily order an environmental impact statement. The more likely approach would be that the court would remand to the responsible governmental unit to allow it to correct any deficiencies in the environmental assessment worksheet.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney and Runbeck had asked, do you have questions to this witness?
Or? Yes, please.
Okay, Representative Mahoney first, then Runbeck, then I'm going to call the slate at that point and then call the other testifiers up, so members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have actually two things I'd like to speak to. Mr. Lightfoot, you were really clear in talking about anecdotal evidence of improvements delays in permitting and the cost. But is that also true in your statement about no improvement in the environment? Is that just anecdotal, or do you have definitive facts that because these things took so long, there was no improvement in the environment? These permits took so long to get.
Mr. Lightfoot?
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, I can only I say the facts are mine, and so therefore they are facts. They are anecdotal because they are mine and mine only. And I don't speak for all environmental lawyers in the state when I say it. But I can tell you that in my experience, not just anecdotal, but in my 20 two-odd years of experience, and in my practice in Minnesota since 1994, I have rarely seen permit delays result in better environmental permits. The delays sometimes are caused by by companies, but more often than not, they are caused by the Pollution Control Agency, and not necessarily out of any malice, but based upon the Pollution Control Agency's relative priorities, and based upon other things that the Pollution Control Agency has to do. So, ultimately, I have had a number of clients who have submitted draft permits and have waited, or submitted information for draft permits and have waited a very, very long time for permits that look identical to what a draft did. There is no change, but there is substantial delay.
And Mr. Chair, Mahoney, just to finish this off, I've been at the legislature for 12 years now, and I have sat on one of the committees that does redevelopment and environmental cleanup of industrial sites. And one of the things you want to do in government is learn from past mistakes. And seeing how about 80% of the revenue comes from the metro area for this, to run this state, we're paying for it, my constituents, as opposed to someone from the northwestern corner of the state. The cost to clean up those past mistakes doesn't range in the tens of millions. It ranges in the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And I wish I could say that most of it was spent in the urban area. Large portions of it is spent in rural areas, whether it's Worthington, Moorhead, Rosso, outskirts of St. Cloud, or southeast, or up in the northeast. So, here to the members on the committee, I don't necessarily disagree, because even the governor said that we should increase and speed up the permits today. He issued his executive order. But understand that the worse our permits are, the more our taxpayers are going to pay for these particular companies that have polluted the land, not carried enough insurance, hired a really good lawyer, and then bankrupt. So I think we can do better, but I really, this is a law that this bill's come forth in less than 6 months. I've got plans that I've been working on for 4 years trying to get ideas together. I'm working with Representative Scott and Representative Zakrowski on some divorce stuff. That's been in the works for 10 years. This idea comes forth, and in 2 weeks, we're going to hear it. You know, it hasn't percolated for very long. There's some things we can do, but this is pretty fast-paced. And I don't see the solutions to the problems. I just see the rhetoric to the problem at this particular point.
So Representative Mahoney, I might just correct you a little bit. If you listen to Representative Hortman, she dealt with this over a year ago in her committee, and the bill similar to this. So I don't think the issue or the idea is brand new. But doing what the agencies do and taking a long time to go through it is what we're trying to avoid. Representative Fabian, or Mr. Lightfoot, or Representative Fabian, any response to that? And then we'll go to Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, I can't address cleanup costs in Roseau. I've lived there for 34 years. Quite honestly, I don't know of any that have happened there. I've raised my family up there. The students who live in the community and go to the school that I teach at live up there. We enjoy the outdoors. We enjoy the land, the water, and so forth. I can't imagine anybody wanting to somehow cause them harm through this legislation. I will say that I just got a letter today, an email, just a short time before our committee started, from the county engineer who was here to testify last week. from Kitson County. He told me that he just got off the phone with MCIT, which is the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and the numbers are staggering, he quotes. Related costs to Rosa County, $137,000. To Kitson County, $268,000. Now, for our counties, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And what's really disturbing to me about those figures is that this was on a $12,000 ditch cleaning project. The system is broken in my part of the state. It needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed quickly. If you read the Fargo Forum last weekend, one of the reporters from the Fargo Forum contacted Marvin Windows and Doors, who is a magnificent employer up in my part of the state, and they asked them why they expanded their business to Grafton and Fargo, North Dakota. And their quote in the paper, you can go and look at it, is because of taxes and regulatory issues. I've seen it before. I've seen other companies leave our area. I don't want DigiKey to expand outside of the state of Minnesota. I don't want Polaris going to Monterrey, Mexico anymore. I want them staying up there. We have a young upstart company called Central Boiler that has got a lot of people working there in a small town of Greenbush. At some point in the future, I hope that they are able to expand. And I want that expansion to come either in our district or in the state of Minnesota. I have watched for too long businesses not necessarily expanding outside of our state, but starting up in other states. Take a look at what's going on in Fargo-Moorhead in the last 35 years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Runbeck, and then we'll ask the other testifiers to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Lightfoot. I don't know if you have information with you, but can you talk a little bit to the cost for a defendant to take a case through, you know, these levels of court actions, and also sort of some volume? I mean, how many get appealed and how many of these permits are appealed and approved?
Mr. Lightfoot.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can give you some general, I don't have extensive figures, but I can give you some general, I can give you some general figures. Typically in, again, depending upon the case, a project proposer will often intervene in a district court in support of a responsible governmental unit that's being sued by a plaintiff or a plaintiff's group. These cases are typically resolved on cross motions for summary judgment, which means they're resolved on the law. But in Minnesota, in district court, that entails filing three briefs. Your initial brief in support of the motion, an opposition brief in support of the other side's motion, and a reply brief. You can see costs in the district court depending upon the level of motion practice and whether there's an attempt to supplement the administrative record, running anywhere from $35,000 to $40,000 up to $100,000 or more. And then off to the Court of Appeals. Again, the briefs are the legal arguments are essentially the same, but you're still talking about additional briefs. Typically, the Court of Appeals is less costly, but you could see again anywhere from $15,000-$25,000 or more, depending upon the level of effort and the billing rates of the lawyers. So it is. There is a substantial cost involved to all parties, and not just to defendants, not just to responsible governmental units, but also to plaintiffs, to beginning these cases in the district court under MEPA.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Will you be around for further questions if other questions come up?
I will, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Members, Tom Peterson from the Farmers Union had some testimony. He asked us to hand out. He wasn't able to make it or isn't able to make it right now. So I think you've all got a copy of that. We'll call Mr. King up. Is it Bobby King? He's first on our testifier list, and then Rich Neumeister is the other person we have that's requested to testify on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. King, if you can identify yourself for the record, but first Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief question while Mr. King is orienting himself. Has a fiscal note been requested for this bill?
Representative Fabian, has there been any fiscal notes requested? I'm not aware of any, but maybe staff or Representative Fabian know more.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not to my knowledge, no.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that that would be appropriate considering that we're talking about both potential savings and potential costs here. I think we're asking staff of the agencies to do more, and we don't know what costs might be involved in that. And also, we're talking about potential savings and eliminating one of the court proceedings. So I think it would be interesting to know what, in fact, the fiscal implications of this bill are.
Representative Fabian, you may want to talk to the fiscal staff and see if there's any of that information that could be gleaned or a request
Chair,
could be made.
Yeah, thank you. We do have that. It will be going to Ways and Means. Okay.
And Representative Hilty, it is going to Judiciary after this, which is a Finance and a Policy Committee, but you might want to talk to staff, Representative Fabian, in between here and there as well, just see if that information is obtainable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hilty. Mr. King, identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Bobby King. I'm representing the Land Stewardship Project. We're a membership-based organization that works for a sustainable family farm-based system of agriculture and prosperous rural communities. Over the last 12 years or so, our members, rural members and farmer members, have been involved in maybe 10 to 12 environmental review cases, some of which have ended up going to court. And it's been their decision to take this to court, and they've raised the money. So the perspective of the Land Stewardship Project on this is, as a grassroots group and as grassroots folks raising money to look out in their for what they see as the best interests of their community. The first thing I want to say about the issue of the day in court is people want to see and be a part of decisions that affect their life. They want to be in the courtroom. So knowing that your lawyer is advocating for you is one thing, but to see there, to be there and witness the process is really important to folks. Most of the folks that we've worked with have never been through a process like this before and probably never been in court before. So having confidence in the process is seeing the process and is being there. And if this was to go to an appellate court, that would be much more difficult and in some cases impossible. A big expense for the folks that a lot of the folks we work with is taking time off work to be in the courtroom. And that becomes a 2 or 3 day, two or three hour window at home in their district court versus all day for the appellate court. The other thing I'd say is in all the cases we've been involved in, and I don't know how indicative this is of the cases across the board, there's also been an issue with the local zoning permit. And so this would have resulted in them needing to file cases in both the district court and the appellate court, once again driving up costs substantially, perhaps putting it out of their reach. The decision to engage in this is serious, and it's a significant amount of money for these folks. Lastly, I know that Karna Peters had emailed the committee a letter. Her law firm has represented some of our members, and so her experience is one of a lawyer representing grassroots folks. If folks didn't get that, I have some copies.
We did get that, and we did put it in members' packets, just so you know.
That's my testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. King. Any questions, members?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And King. Over the last 10 years, can you talk about how many cases your organization has involved itself in Minnesota? And
Mr. King?
How many have you, in how many cases has the permit been denied?
Well, the cases have been around environmental review. Of the cases that I can think of right now that have gone to court, less than six folks have chosen to challenge the decision in court. The standard's very high. You have to prove that the agency was arbitrary and capricious. So when people are looking at spending their own money, they're also looking at their chances of success, and it's a difficult standard to prove, as is appropriate. I can think of one case where the project was never built. I can think of two other cases where the project was built at a different location. I can go back and look at all the ones we've been involved in and give you a summary if you want. But it's not very indicative of the cases across the state, the handful that we've been involved in.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. King, then it sounds like your organization is much more active than at the environmental public hearings and so on. Is that where your focus is? Because it doesn't sound like there's, this court, the issue of the courts and what level it's at doesn't seem to affect, your activity.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rumbach, it would make it more difficult for our members when they wanted to challenge a decision in court to do that. It would make it more expensive, and it would make it more difficult for them to witness the process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question for Mr. King,
okay.
but I wanted to take this opportunity to address an issue that I was not able to bring up in the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee when this bill was heard. Since we sort of ran out of time in the chair, although he had acknowledged my desire to address this issue earlier, or forgot about it and just called for a vote on the bill. So I guess to begin with, I would have a question for Representative Holberg.
And Representative Hilty?
Yes.
Would you mind if we just suspended? And I will come back to you before we vote, and if not, you rise a point of order. I'm wondering if we could get Rich Neumeister, who's the last testifier. Being it's more to the bill, we can have discussion at the end of the testifiers. Is that all right?
That would be fine, Mr. Chair. I anticipated that. I just wanted to get my foot in the door here.
And I'll ask my committee administrator to break my arm if we don't let you come back and talk, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No other questions for Mr. King. Mr. Neumeister, why don't you proceed with your testimony, and then we'll get back into the discussion.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a pleasure. This is my inaugural testifying here. For some of you folks that may not know myself, I've been around for decades, and I'm someone who...
Please identify yourself for the tape.
Yeah, particularly for the new people. I'm someone who has been here for decades and offered a perspective on privacy, civil liberties, and Rich Neumeister, for the record, and openness in government. And if you want to know more on your own time, you can just go to www.richneumeister.com. I'm doing a lot of stuff this session, sharing a lot of issues that will be before you on that posting. I'd like to address to Section 7 of the bill. And to me, this is a very important thing. It's very important for accountability and transparency, particularly in the environmental impact statement. Now, currently under law, this is what generally happens. The proposer, it could be a business, a private entity, a private party, wants to do some change in the community. Then what happens, they go, and they have to probably more than likely file EIS. Now, the thing is, the state or the government entity will either, if they have the funding themselves, they'll do it themselves, or else they'll contract out to a third party to do it. But then all the information, the EIS, the supporting documentation, the underlying data, all that comes back to the government, and currently is government data. Section 7 of the bill, and some other things that I've read in other relating bills, it basically, from my perspective, says that the proposer, so let's say the 3M company, the whatever entity, does a draft EIS, they just give the report to the government entity, and that's it. And the company can keep all the underlying data, or you know, that the private proposer or the private party, they can keep all the underlying data, the supporting documentation, whatever. The important reason why this is important to make to clear this, to make sure that you keep what is currently the thrust of the law, is that for accountability and transparency, so that when the government entity makes a decision to go forward based on the EIS, that the public has the right to see if the government is doing right or to question it. And so, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I've spoke briefly with the chief author of this, and I think he's getting used and acclimated to the issue of data practices, which I understand you had a presentation of last week. But this is one of the issues that will come to your committee, you know, to clarify that it should be public or should it not. And that's a policy change that I see happening, and it's not clarified for me and for the citizens of Minnesota. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's my perspective, and if there are any questions, I can answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Any members got questions for this witness? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Neumeister. I just want to understand your concern here. Your concern that somehow the agency isn't getting all of the underlying data, or it is, and that wouldn't be publicly available. I'm just wondering, if an entity is doing its own EIS and then there's a review by the agency, wouldn't the agency then be in possession of the underlying data, and then that would be discoverable by the Data Practices Act? I'm trying to follow the...
I think it's...
Mr. Neumeister.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, it depends. Let's say under Section 7, the private party does the EIS, and if the government asks, oh, we want to see the underlying data, then it is part of the government, but that may not happen. Also, at the same time, the company, the private entity, and the government entity will say, okay, we'll give you the underlying data to the government, but we want it back after you come up with some decision. Huh. That's, I see a game playing here with that, and I just want to make sure that no matter what happens and what process, that all that data remains public. Now, I just want to point out to what we had in the year 2099. Well, before that, what happened is a lot of government entities would do private contract work with the private sector for a public function, and you wanted to know where that money or what was being used for. Basically, the government wouldn't have the data. You go to the private sector, oh, we can't give you the data, even though taxpayer monies are being funded. So you made a decision, legislative policy, to say whatever for the public function, the money goes to a private sector, all that stuff that would be public, held by the private entity, would also be public as under the Data Practices Act. So I think it's important that if you're going to give the responsibility of doing an EIS for the draft with no contract from a state from a government entity to the, you know, the business, that the public needs to make sure accountability, transparency, and openness, and just to double check to make sure that government is doing right. And that can be all kinds of parties, whether it be pro-environmentalists or anti, you know what I mean, there's no anti-environmentalists, or more of a balance, or whatever you want to call it. I'm just saying, bottom line for me is transparency and accountability. And that could be lost with Section 7.
Mr. Chair?
I represent Mahoney.
This is a better example. I have in my district, someone did an environmental study. They were required to do an environmental study. They did it all on their own dime. They came back to the permitting agency and said, because of environmental concerns, we don't really want to do it there, and we rescind the permit. The neighbors were trying to figure out exactly what had been done and what was the problem, because they have children that live there. They don't get any of that data. It's all private data. It's all owned by the company, and the company's not going to share it. So you're correct in some respects, and you know, I think that gives you an example of what you were talking about better than anything else.
Mr.
And to this day, they still don't know what the problem is, because yep, you don't have the money to do the environmental statement as it is.
Mr. Neumeister, any comment? Otherwise, Representative Hillstrom has it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney gave an example.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have an example in my district as well. For example, they're currently looking at whether or not to do a development at the Howe Fertilizer, former Howe Fertilizer plant in my district. And the private developer did some testing, and then there was an argument or disagreement between them and the Department of Ag on whether or not the right test was done in the right places and the right amounts. And so ultimately, if the data to the public, who is worried about whether or not there's groundwater contamination, I think there should be public information. So, Mr. Chair, if I actually might ask the author if it is his intention to have that data be private.
Representative Hillstrom, thank you. Representative Fabian?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess I would ask Mr. Lightfoot to address that. You know, again, I'm a little bit like Glenn. I am a layman at this, and it is fairly technical, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, Mr. Lightfoot, can you offer us some? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not concerned about whether the language says exactly what it is that you want it to say. My question is it your intention that that data be private or that that data be public? You're the author of the bill, and I'm just curious as to your intention in the long run.
It's public.
Mr. Lightfoot, can you offer us additional?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon is absolutely correct. The information that is, this is environmental review, which is different than private studies dealing with respect to particular contaminated property. The under Section 7 simply tracks the language that is used in the National Environmental or the practice that's used in the National Environmental Policy Act, and for that matter, the practice that MEPA uses for environmental assessment worksheets. In the first instance, the project proposer develops the information and then submits the information and drafts to the responsible governmental unit. At the time that information is submitted to the responsible governmental unit, that is government data and would be available under the Data Practices Act. The environmental review rules also specifically state that underlying data that is referenced in an environmental impact statement or an environmental assessment worksheet may be incorporated by reference. So if the underlying data is referenced in an environmental review document, it is by rule incorporated by reference, and it would be public data.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hobart?
Can I ask a question to that point?
Yeah.
If the person preparing the report discovered data that they did not want to become public, wouldn't the easiest way to do that be to not reference it in the report?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have been involved in a number of federal environmental impact statements where project proposer consultants have prepared the document in the first instance. I have never seen a project proposer or a consultant withhold information from a federal agency. Similarly, not to say that it hasn't happened, but I haven't seen it happen. Similarly, with respect to environmental assessment worksheets, the agency will require, the worksheet is very specific, as are the requirements of environmental impact statements. There's very specific information that the agency or that the responsible governmental unit must have. If it doesn't get it, it's going to ask the consultant and the project proposer for that information. So that I wouldn't say that it will never happen, but the likelihood that that a project proposer, or for that matter, the consultant for a responsible governmental unit, would withhold information, I think, is small.
And
over more,
Mr. Chair, if I might, that were to be the case, what would be the penalty for that?
Mr. Lightfoot, do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there would be no penalty under the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act per se. There may be other statutes, including potentially criminal statutes, that could apply.
All right, thank you.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This sounds like one of those things that maybe hasn't been clearly vetted yet. There are a lot of people on this committee that have strong concerns about data practices. I thought I heard a rumor about a subcommittee or something that we were going to have on this. Have we got that in the works yet?
Right now it's a subcommittee of one, so...
It sounds like an efficient process.
That's all I've heard back from members that would have an interest in serving on it, Ms. Representative Lesh. So. Well,
Mr. Chair, the reason I ask is I'm not sure if that's maybe the more appropriate body to vet this, because this is a larger issue. We could, of course, vet it here, but I don't know if we're in a position to do it today because of this issue that cropped up rather than lay it over. I mean, we haven't covered some other areas of the bill yet, but I wondered, Mr. Chair, about if, in fact, we could get that committee set up in short order and have them review the data practices parts of this bill that haven't been considered.
Representative Lesh, something to consider, although I'm understanding we're basically on the same page. That what Representative Mahoney raised for an issue is this information is subject to the Data Practices Act and public information. So I haven't heard anything contrary to that. Mr. Neumeister, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I just want to at least respond and then end up my testimony. One of the things that came up very clear, it's by rule, not by state statute. And secondly, you're making a change in where generally IES drafts or statements or whatever generally have been done by the government or someone that has contract with the government to make sure all that data comes under the Data Practices Act. What I'm encouraging is to make it clear with this, where the proposer now is doing the draft, that all data of that draft, you know, be public, just like with anything else. And again, there are the ambiguities and all that, and sometimes it just takes a moment or so. But I do think that if good faith with everybody on board here, it can be corrected as the bill progresses. But it's up to you as a body. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify that it is not covered under the Data Practices Act the way that it is drafted. It is by rule. And so if we believe that it needs to be clear that it is to be under the Data Practices Act, this is the appropriate committee to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I could just respond to that. If the as Representative Simon stated, if the information is submitted to a responsible governmental unit, it is government information. So I don't understand how it couldn't be. This provision is no different than the practice under the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act right now with respect to environmental assessment worksheets. An environmental assessment worksheet is prepared by a project proposer in draft and submitted along with the underlying documentation to a responsible governmental unit. That information is, by the Data Practices Act, part of is government data, quite apart from the question of the Environmental Quality Board rules. The only reference I made with respect to the Environmental Quality Board rules was for information that is merely referenced in a document and then incorporated by reference, but perhaps wouldn't necessarily be submitted to an agency or a responsible governmental unit.
We had a question on Representative Grunhagen as well.
Oh, just a comment on data practices. Again, I'm a layperson, not a lawyer, but I was on the school board for over 15 years. And what I observed about data practices issues, it tends to become a black hole of no decision, okay? In other words, it can be and not always, but sometimes, it just becomes a convoluted discussion by less than expert, becomes a convoluted discussion by less than experts on the data privacy, and the result is it just drags out and perpetuates the entire process. So I think that you know, there's more committees to be heard in the future. We also have a vote on the floor along with debate and discussion. There's plenty of opportunities to vet this bill in the area of data privacy. I think the author of the bill, along with Attorney Lightfoot, are perfectly capable of addressing some of those issues. The other comment I just make very quickly is that in relationship to environmental damage in the past that has cost state taxpayers millions of dollars, my only comment would be that having observed human nature both on a school board and also in private business, one of the things I've observed is that people tend to go to extremes. I think in the past we probably weren't strict enough as far as the environmental protection of the state, and we did have some real bad disasters. Unfortunately, human nature being what it is, it tends to go to the other extreme, and I think that's what we see here today with the testimony of Dan Fabian, the author, and some of the examples that have been brought up. We have gone to the point where the MPCA and the DNR are strangling our business sector. And this is the very sector that is supposed to produce jobs and provide the tax dollars to help us create a clean environment in the state of Minnesota. So from that perspective, I see that this bill should go forward, and I strongly support it, and appreciate the opportunity to make comments, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I think that was really, that last part was somewhat directed towards me in terms of going to extremes or taxpayer dollars. PCA and DNR, I mean, 80% of the air permits are issued in 110 days. 80% of them. Now, you're talking 20%. Maybe does this bill only deal with 20%? I don't know. Water permits, 75% of them are turned over in 130 days. There's a whole variety of others. Landfill permits take primarily a year. Landfills last forever. They're kind of, as we found out in down in Albert Lea, where I think it cost us $30 million to clean up one just about 3 or 4 years ago. So, again, I'm not sure how fast you want these things to pass through. If you wanted to do it in a day like in Iowa, that's fine, but let's just make sure that if you're going to permit it in a day, they've got enough insurance and business background that they don't belly up and stick us with the tax dollar, with the fee.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if the author of the bill might be willing to answer a couple questions.
Representative Fabian. Go ahead, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian, is it your intent with your bill that the same amount of data and information be available to the public, whether a city or a county contracts with an entity to do the report, or whether the private business or development firm does it? Is that your intent with this bill?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that's the intent of my bill.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure that the bill as written actually accomplishes that, but I don't think it's a huge major fix to get to that point. I think this bill's got a couple stops. I'm guessing judiciary. I'm guessing there will be some cost, some savings. It will be interesting fiscal note to see once it comes out. But given that we don't have a data practice subcommittee up and running, I think that I'd like to, with the author's word that he'd be willing to work on it, work with him in the as it moves forward to the next committee, and see if we can get some language to clarify that not only the report is submitted, but the underlying facts that came to the conclusion of the report would also become public, so that we'd have the same level of transparency that we do now when the government entities contract for the work, that would follow if this bill becomes law, if a private entity does the work.
Well, thank you, Representative Holberg, Representative Fabian, and I just talked to our reconfirmed it with our House counsel, and maybe I'll ask Mr. Gehring if he can just offer the same insight to the committee that he offered to me. But essentially, by default, the information becomes public. We haven't added protection to it. But, Mr. Gehring, would you restate that for the committee so they can hear what we just had to talk about?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I believe that's correct. Since there's no specific classification in this bill for the data, any of the data that would be submitted to a government entity is going to, by default, be public data. But if there's concerns about types of data that might not be submitted to the government entity, then that might be something that the
Mr. Chair, okay. I think that's the problem. That's if a government entity was contracting to have the work done, all of the work product of that contract would be public. But in the case here where private entities do it on their own, as I read it, only what they choose to submit, and albeit it's very prescriptive to get through the worksheet and provide all kinds of information, but I think you run the risk of some of the underlying work product maybe not becoming a part of the report and hence not being public.
Well, and Representative Hoberg, at some point you could draw that down as far as you want, what every entity does something that, whether it's a post-it note that was just a note to remind them to call somebody, I suppose there's documents. Maybe somebody has, I know there's current processes under law that we contract out for reports. I would assume we're following that standard, but maybe that's the better question. If we're following the similar practice that's already in place, Mr. Lightfoot or others?
And Mr. Chair, it's not my intent or goal here to drag this bill down in this committee. I've offered to work with the author. I think some concerns have been expressed. This is not something we're going to write on the fly here in committee. So I'm just trying to be helpful, Mr. Chair, and keep things moving along.
I think in the interest of just having the committee know, it's know that the process is satisfactory, I think, is okay. If somebody has that information, Mr. Lightfoot, do you have any? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I think we as a committee are a bit concerned about the data privacy. Right. Representative Hoberg has offered, she's probably one of the sharpest on data privacy. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be a good idea for her to work with the author and then you as the chair to promise the committee to bring the bill back before its last stop so they can go over it and you can, as the chair, can define the limits of what we're going to go through and go into. You have the gavel. You can gavel us down if you want. And just to reassure us, because I have concerns too.
Representative Hillstrom, thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoberg and I have served on this committee for some time surrounding the data practices issues, and Representative Hoberg is considered an expert in this area, and I recommend, Mr. Chair, that you listen to her because over the last years, bipartisanly, this committee has not let data practices bills that had problems out of the jurisdiction of this committee without fixing it, because people don't understand it on the House floor when you're making these debates, and this is the jurisdiction of the committee to deal with the data practices issue. It has not been a partisan issue. We have just consistently wanted to make sure it was correct. So if Representative Hoberg is committed to working on the issue, I suggest you take her up on it. I'm happy to work with Representative Hoberg as well and the author, and it should stop back to make sure it's right before it goes to the floor.
I will take Representative Hoberg up and have on her word and on her suggestion that we clarify this fact. I'm not promising that there's a need to bring it back to committee, but I will tell you, Representative Hillstrom, Representative Mahoney, I will work with the author and Representative Hillstrom and Representative Hoberg, and if there's an issue that comes up that we feel is something the committee should look at, we will call it back at that point. But I'm not sure I've heard the same thing that some of you have heard, but I will take time and make sure that's the case, or things are resolved, and Representative Hoberg and Hillstrom, you both have a great deference on this committee and on this topic, and so I would tell the members that's the way we'll proceed if that makes sense. Representative, we have one more testifier, Mr. Larson from the rural counties, and then we'll finish up with the questions. Dan Larson, if you can come forward. We're getting to the point where we now need to be concise, but we would like to have you offer your testimony on this bill, Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, I got the message. Thank you. Thank you for your indulgence. Dan Larson, Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, 25 rural counties that work as a caucus within the Association of Minnesota Counties, here to testify in support of House File 1. It's a good bill. We thank Representative Fabian for bringing it forward, and we hope that the bill would pass this committee. The MRCC supports meaningful, timely environmental review and opposes government process that stands in the way of the social and economic and the safety concerns that we've heard some of the stories about today. So I want to recognize and appreciate Representative Mahoney's statement. 80% of revenue, state-generated revenues, are generated from the Twin Cities area. We in the rural areas would love to even that out. We would love the chance to have jobs that we can pass along to our high school graduates, that they can and give them hope and opportunity that they can stay in or near the town that they grew up in. But right now, that's not the case for many different reasons, one of which is my counties, two of which include both Kitson and Rosso counties that Representative Fabian referenced on a ditch project that should have taken a $12,000 ditch project that is currently up to $405,000 because of complications. So the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus supports this bill. We hope that it will pass this committee, and we'll be supporting it along the way. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Larson? We'll go back to Representative Lesh and Representative Hilty. Had questions or comments, Representative Lesh, to the witness or to the topic?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Witness, or question is for the author. Prior to my question, though, Mr. Chair, I would point out, Mr. Grunhagen, or Representative Grunhagen, I think you'll find that this data practices issue cuts across party lines up here, and not just with respect to Representative Holberg and some of us, but as a person whose division handled data practices last year, I was able to cleverly avoid the ongoing discussions about some data practices issue, which was spearheaded by several people and included Mr. Neumeister over the summer. It is arduous, tedious, and ugly, and we speed through it to our own detriment, I think, and that is not a partisan issue. I realize it can get awkward because this is your House File 1, but there is no way that you want this to go through without adequately handling it, because you pay for it later. Whoever's in power will pay for it later. My question for the author is, Representative Fabian, is it your intention to amend the bill to reflect the governor's executive order that was signed this morning?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative, to be honest with you, I have not seen the executive order at this point, so I can't make comment on that.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh?
I think this is important because that order was signed this morning, and no doubt partially because of discussion about what's going on in this bill. But that said, from all what's happened, it addresses a substantial amount of what you're trying to achieve in this bill, and Governor Dayton did in 3 weeks what apparently the previous administration wasn't able to do in 8 years. So I wonder, we're already moving in that direction. Maybe it doesn't completely obviate the bill, but I think it makes it critically important. My second question, Mr. Chair, for Representative Fabian is, does House File 1 represent a change of heart for your caucus, which previously held that local control was the mantra for regulatory or legal disputes?
Would you repeat the question, please?
Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Does House File 1 represent a change of heart for your caucus, which once held that local control was the mantra for regulatory or legal disputes.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not going to speak for the caucus. I think that both issues are very important, and I think that through this process, we're going to find out that both of them are. And for me, I would say that both issues are very important, absolutely. The data privacy and local control is very important. Living where I do, I've heard over and over and over again from our local elected officials the frustration that they have with this process. I've also heard, and I know personally, that they are committed to having an environment that is safe for all of Minnesotans. So.
Okay, well, by way of comment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesch.
Oh, thank you. I think it's important. I think you're going to have to come up with a better answer than that, Representative Fabian, because it is a change. Obviously, local control can suit your needs at the given time. And the discussion about us being in the midst of a place where companies can choose to go elsewhere. If I want to form a business with Representative Mahoney, and we want to choose where we're going to locate, okay, see, he said he never would, but I think he would. Depends on the business. We could choose to locate it in Minnesota. We could choose to locate it in Chernobyl, Ukraine, or Bhopal, India, for that matter. Or we maybe have better luck in getting permitting through. Nonetheless, Minnesotans have generally liked to ensure that we have clean air and water, so that's going to be a concern. I guess I would end my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. I think we'll move on. Representative Hilty, back to you, and if you want to discuss the topic you wanted earlier, and any other questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, if I could ask Representative Hoberg, we've been dealing a lot with anecdotal evidence this afternoon, and I don't know if this is anecdotal or not. I think I actually read this, but maybe I only heard that you said it, that as chair of the Ways and Means Committee, you were expecting that the work of the finance committees would be done in the finance committees and not in your committee. And yet what I heard earlier, and you're nodding assent to that, what I heard earlier was that we didn't need to be concerned about a fiscal note in this committee because the bill was going to Ways and Means. And I would say that one of the things that I was not able to bring up in the Environment Committee and when this bill was heard was the question of a fiscal note. If there are fiscal implications, obviously some of them have to do with agencies under the purview of that committee. Likewise, I think that there are some questions about the fiscal implications under the purview of other committees as well. We haven't been able to address that. But one thing that has not been addressed at all is that the Office of the Legislative Auditor is engaged currently in a major study of environmental permitting in the state of Minnesota. As I recall from last year when this came up as a member of the Audit Commission, I believe I'm correct, and Representative Holbrook could maybe correct me. I think that, and maybe I should explain for the new members of the legislature, that every year the Office of the Legislative Auditor solicits input from the legislature, and the Legislative Audit Commission facilitates this to determine a certain limited number of issues that we would that the legislature would like the Legislative Auditor's Office to investigate and report back. And I think that the history of that office over the years is such that we all recognize that it really does stellar work, and in fact, I think it's been recognized nationally any number of times. So I think that was the biggest vote-getter last spring among the legislators who participated in ordering those priorities, and we made it on the Legislative Audit Commission a very high priority. It was hoped at the time that the report would be available by now, but as Auditor Nobles testified in the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee, because as they got into the study, they recognized the complexity of it and felt the necessity, in order to do it justice, of expanding it somewhat beyond what they initially thought. It's still in process. However, Editor Nobles told the committee last week that it was expected to be completed and available to be presented in February, probably sometime mid-February, 2 or 3 weeks from now, in other words. I don't know why we do things like ask for a major investigation by our premier investigatory agent and then turn around and ignore them, which is what we're proposing to do here in passing a bill that directly is concerned with the very issues that the auditor's office is addressing without even bothering to hear what they have to say about it. And so, Mr. Chair, data privacy issues may be, or data practice issues may be significant. Fiscal implications certainly are significant. But I think that it would be a travesty to say that we have, first of all, overwhelmingly, as a legislator, ask the Office of the Legislative Auditor to look into this and then decide to go ahead and process a bill the whole way through the whole legislative process without paying any attention to what their conclusions are, which has already been publicly acknowledged as being something that they recognize as very complex. So, Mr. Chair, because of that, I would move to table this bill until we have an opportunity to hear from the legislative auditor, and I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call's been asked for to table the bill. Let me just...
Mr. Chair?
To his point? To his point?
Representative Runbeck, what's your point of order?
Well, a response. I have a response to Representative Hill.
I don't. Lay on the table is not debatable. We'll just take the roll call at this
Mr.
point.
Mr. Chair, was it your motion that it go to Judiciary Finance? Not
it was.
The means?
But
okay.
The motion on the table would be, or the in front of us would be to lay this on bill on the table.
I understand that, but in Representative Hilty's discussion, he talked about this bill going to Ways and Means, and I wasn't under that understanding, so I'm glad that you clarified that it was actually going to Judiciary Finance.
It is. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Lesch?
Aye.
Representative Grunhagen?
No.
Representative Hillstrom?
Aye.
Representative Hilty?
Aye.
Representative Holdberg?
No.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Hortman?
Absent.
Representative Mahoney?
Aye.
Representative Mazerall?
No.
Representative Pepin?
No.
Representative Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Simon?
Aye.
Representative Wardlow?
No.
Motion fails 10-6. Representative Hilty, just so you know, this probably won't be the first reform for the agencies that this legislature tries to deal with, so I think that report will have adequate time, although I think the appropriate venue would be the Environment Committee, perhaps more than civil law, but maybe both.
Well, Mr. Chair, that was my feeling also, and had I been afforded the opportunity to make that motion in the Environment Committee, I would have. But since this was my only opportunity, I thought that, and it being my last opportunity to both hear the auditor's report and have any input on this bill, I felt that it was appropriate to offer that motion.
Excuse me. Well, anything further, Representative Hilty? Otherwise, we'll move to a couple other people that have asked a question. Well, members, the intention is going to be to vote on this bill today. If we don't get it done before session, we'll come back this evening. So,
well, Mr. Chair, yes, I would just offer a brief comment. Since I've heard discussion of this bill twice now, and certainly discussion of the issue for some time, I think there's some confusion about these processes. There seems sometime to be an attitude toward the environmental permitting process that sort of regards it in the same vein as, for instance, processing automobile title transfers, that this is just a bunch of paperwork that has to be taken care of, and eventually a new piece of paper is handed over to the appropriate party. But, you know, this is a different kind of process than that. This is a process in which, and this is a term that we kick around a lot these days, in which individual freedoms are at issue. It's not a one-sided question, and hopefully the process of permitting is such that unresolved questions are resolved, that when somebody comes along and says, I want to do something I want the public in general to agree that it's okay to do that, I think it's appropriate to have a process in which people are actually able to ask, how does this affect me, and have those questions answered. I've been engaged myself in recent months in a couple of landfill issues in my district, in which I can tell you there's no delay in the permitting process. What the problem is that the people that are concerned about where surface water goes, the effects on groundwater, the effects of having heavy equipment operating across the road from 7 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night and trying to operate a daycare center. Those are questions that people have that are very legitimate. And I think that a process that respects those concerns and proceeds in a way that those concerns can be addressed is quite appropriate. And the whole idea of streamlining everything, I think, needs to be thought out pretty carefully before we just jump into it. The original idea of streamlining was to eliminate wind resistance. It was applied to automobiles and railroad engines. And I don't know that a permitting process is appropriately something that ought to be regarded as eliminating resistance, because the resistance to these processes are very legitimate.
Thank you, Representative Hilty.
Thanks for your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Representative Druskowski, and then Representative Grunhagen, and then I'll, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, I have heard the discussion, and the discussion on data practices. I guess at this point I am unconvinced that that the policy that we do have as a state now, that the default is that any data that enters the public sphere is public, and I haven't been convinced that there's areas in this provision in the bill that are any different than that. And thank you, Representative Holberg and Hillstrom and Westrom for agreeing to take a look at that. I would ask that as you do, we be consistent with the way we have dealt other parts of the law and don't start to carve out special things. Companies have proprietary tools and other things that certainly we wouldn't want to be included in areas and in ways that they haven't before. I would offer to Representative Hilty's comments that there are more bills to come, Representative, hopefully that will address some of those legislative auditor results that do come forward. These provisions in this bill, as I see them, are widely supported, not only in the legislature, but certainly indicated by the governor's support through his executive order that he brought out today. So there are more options to bring some of those recommendations that that the auditor will be bringing forward, and hopefully we can have strong support in bringing some of those reforms together as well, so that we can have create a stronger environment in which we can get jobs going again and bring this economy around. Lastly, I would like to both congratulate and thank Representative Fabian for his work on this bill. He has been diligent in shining the spotlight on these issues, including bringing the governor and others up to his district to actually show them what is going on up there. Hats off to you, Representative Fabian, for that work and your discussion, as I understand, last week with the governor about the bill, which, as I understand, may have prompted his executive order today. So thank you for that, and I look forward to supporting the bill.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll make my comments real brief. Hey, I appreciate the concerns raised by the other side. Discussions like this is what we were elected for. However, when I look at this process, I see that we're elected representatives. We're not a court of justice. Courts of justice deal with incriminating evidence, is my understanding. Elected representatives, we deal with circumstantial evidence and the collective wisdom of the community, which means the testifiers. And if we were to defer to incriminating evidence on every decision we'd make, it could drag out for years. The fact is, our founding fathers set up a process where the collective wisdom of the community and circumstantial evidence is what elected representatives make. And I believe that we've had that here today, and the process will provide further information as we move along. So with that, if it's appropriate, Mr. Chair, I would call the question and ask for a roll call vote.
Well, Representative Grunhagen, as a general rule, we let everybody debate as long as we have to. The previous question may not be a necessary motion. We can ask for a roll call if you prefer that.
I've been advised to withdraw the motion.
Withdraw your previous question.
And I'm always cooperative, so I'll do that.
Representative Grunhagen withdraws his motion for a previous question and roll call. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of the late hour, I will pass.
Okay. Members, I'm going to just have our CA read one sentence out of Section 7 that I just want to bring everybody's attention to. Not in dealing with the data practices issue, we will circle back with Representative Holberg Hillstrom and the author, but I do think it's a standard procedure that's already in place. But Mr. Reynolds, can you just read that sentence that I want everybody to focus on?
Section 7, Subdivision 1
assessment, the board shall, by rule, adopt procedures to authorize the proposer of a specific action to prepare a draft environmental impact statement of that action required pursuant to Section 116D.04 for submission to and review, modification, and determination of completeness and adequacy by the responsible governmental unit, or assess the proposer of a specific action for a reasonable cost of preparing, reviewing, and distributing the environmental impact statement.
And folks, just so we all are clear, it's back, it's still at the agency, and they determine the adequacy, and if they don't have documents, they certainly should be asking for them, and they already have that process in place. But we will follow up on it. I don't raise that issue to diminish, but I do think the issue probably is satisfactorily covered. We're going to trust but verify that in the preceding next few days, in the next couple week or so, while it goes through the next step or two. And if necessary, we will bring it back if there's some further insight that I learn or is brought to my attention by Representative Hillstrom or Holberg. And we need to bring it back. We will. Otherwise, we will cover that issue so it's as we think it is. With that, we'll take a vote on the bill. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of passage of HF1 and referring it to the Judiciary Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Members, with that, thank you for your indulgence. Thank you for the great discussion. We will see you in committee on Wednesday, and the meeting is adjourned.